The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this February 20th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on an overcast, warm Friday afternoon here in the Auburn-Opelika area, and free-for-all Friday is here. The weekend is tomorrow. Maybe you've already started the weekend early. Whatever the case may be, hope you're having a good Friday, and we appreciate you being with us. You got us for the next 2 hours here on ESPN 106.7, and if you've never been with us for a free-for-all Friday, you better buckle up because it's a lot of fun. We have so much to talk about here on the show this afternoon. But Christian, happy Friday to you, sir.
Happy Friday. Yeah, man, it is happy Friday. It's a little muggy outside, a little too muggy for the golf course. I know that you couldn't be out there here today. It makes your heart a little sad. And
yeah, I had to work today. Yeah, I had things going on.
And tomorrow now, the rain is supposed to be coming in,
dude,
which just, ruins everything.
You know my take on rain, don't you?
Don't you? You said that it should only rain at night, right?
Yes. I love our Lord and Savior. But if there was one thing that I could request, it's that it should only rain at night. only rain at night.
Is this like 8 p.m. or is this like a 12 to 4 a.m.?
Yeah, 12 a.m., 5 to 5 a.m., or 11 to 4, whatever. However much rain we need, however much the world needs to you know, function and for things to grow and prosper and be okay, right? Why can't it just rain at night? I understand that like 10% of Americans are up and driving and working and doing things at night. Sorry.
I mean, weather's just a controlled government agency.
That's
anyway.
So yeah, I mean, come on. So I don't know, man. Does anybody like when it rains in the middle of the day? No.
Except on Jacob's like one off day a year. Then it can rain all day to where you can.
No, because that's the day like yesterday or tomorrow that I had a tea time scheduled and had to cancel it because of the rain.
We did have that.
So there you go. But other than that,
so happy,
I'm okay.
Happy Friday, unhappy Saturday, start to the weekend, I guess.
No, we're making it okay. We're doing okay. We're working around it tomorrow.
But no, man, Free for All Friday is exactly that. We have all three major sports that we will be talking about here this afternoon, plus another sport in there as well. We're starting off talking a whole lot of Auburn football as some more quotes from Alex Golish has come out about what he's wanting to do with the offense and not necessarily changing things up, but how fast he wants this offense to work. We're going to dive into some of the numbers. It's going to be a whole lot of fun comparing South Florida's offense versus Auburn's offense in 2025. We're also going to talk about the run game because Coach Golish has made it very, very prominent in every single one of his interviews of re-emphasizing the fact that Auburn people like running the football. He likes running the football, and so that's what they are going to do. We're going to dive into a little running back conversation with Jeremiah Cobb and a couple of the other guys in there, Bryson Washington in there as well, and Byron Brown, what that can look like for Auburn's offense on the ground in 2026. We also have a special interview coming up for you at 2:30, a little bit of baseball conversation in there as well, and hour number two reserved for the hardwood.
Yes, we'll talk all things basketball in hour two, bracketology, Auburn, Kentucky, other games and teams around the SEC and college basketball. But Phone lines are open on this Free For All Friday. We want to hear from you. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about today as we head into the weekend? Give us a call, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390, as the phone lines are open, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. We've got some more American hockey coming up in just a couple of minutes.
Yeah, so if you ever just hear a random cheer like you did yesterday, it's not because of Alabama basketball like I thought it was for a split second before looking to my left and seeing the TV.
Yeah.
It is, because it's the semifinal, right?
Yes, yes, the semifinals. The Americans getting ready to take on Slovakia coming up in the semifinals. And the gold medal match will be Sunday morning over there in Milan. So
who's on the other side? Who are the other two?
Did Canada end up winning, Tripp? I'm looking. Tripp's going to let
us know. While he's looking, he wants to work today, so give him a call. Again, I mean,
yeah, let that man answer the phone.
He wants to talk to you more than we want to talk to you, which speaks for – he said never mind. So
He said no, I'm good. So, again, tons of stuff. Oh, well, given the celebration I'm seeing on the – oh, no,
oh, it's Canada and – oh, my gosh.
Oh,
did Canada score in the final 30 seconds of the game?
Oh, they did. A little one-timer. That's an Ovechkin special. That's not who that is, but – that's a pure Ovechkin special. Man, five hold him with about 30 seconds. So I assume Canada did end up winning.
Yeah, 3-2. That was the final one.
That's so awesome. Ooh, he may have been offsides. Anyway, so we'll keep you updated on what happens with Team USA in the semifinals up in the Olympics. But yes, we start the show with football. How about that? In the middle of February, we start with football today, where Alex Golish continues to excite Auburn fans, at least say the right things, and almost going out of his way, Christian, to specify certain things and clarify certain things and tell people what the plan is going to be. Does it mean it's going to work on the field this fall? No, we'll have to wait and see. But he continues, like I said, to kind of lay out the foundation, the groundwork of what Auburn wants to do, especially on the offensive side of the football.
And even more so on the ground, because that was one of the very first things that we heard Coach Golish talk about in his introductory press conference, and he even paused to let everybody there almost give him a round of applause, because he said something along the lines of, you know, we're going to run the football because I've heard that folks around here like running the football, and almost just bathed in the round of applause there for a few moments. And you feel like he brings it up every single time, talking about the dynamic run game that he wants to have and has had with his teams over the past couple of years. We'll dive into some stats here in just a few moments about South Florida's run game versus Auburn's run game. But he wants to do that by getting up and snapping the football. And you feel like that is a breath of fresh air for Auburn fans, just by the standpoint of, man, you're not going to try and get really late into, I almost said shot clocks, shows the season that we're in right now, but not getting late into play clocks. He wants to get out, he wants to go and keep his foot on the gas. And you feel like that's something that Auburn wanted to do at times, but didn't have the offensive success to be able to do that. And so you mentioned it, saying the right things is Alex Golish so far.
I think Auburn couldn't do it, Christian, for several reasons under Hugh Freeze. A, when he first got here, they didn't have the talent to do it, right? They didn't have the talent to get up and go. They weren't able to consistently pick up first downs. They weren't able to consistently get up and snap the football and do what they needed to do. And then in his final year, right, this past season of Auburn football, we realized and came to realize they weren't able to go fast and execute at a high level because nobody knew what the hell was going on.
I'll even add a third bullet point to that. He realized that he couldn't go fast because he knew his defense was still on the sidelines trying to take in wins. I mean, the defense is playing 75% of the second half. Yeah, you're going to have to slow things down when you get a first down, because otherwise the defense has to run right back onto the field.
Right, and you can only go so fast when you continue to go three and out. I mean, Hudson Cock can only run so fast. You know what I mean? Like, that is what the problems were with the Auburn offense over the three-year span, and even dating back to the Harsin years, which whatever the heck that offense was, and then in the tail end of Malzahn, where he tried to run the same offense he ran in 2013, and crazy enough, people adjusted.
Two things about that should excite you if you are Jacob Goins and an Auburn fan, we do have a punting statistic that I found with Auburn and South Florida that we will read here in just a few moments, but also about adapting and making changes on the offensive end of the floor, or my goodness, basketball terms, baby.
It's okay. You're not fully in basketball season anymore.
Dang.
Just for,
yeah, so,
just for AU.
When Golish takes the field in the top half of the first.
yeah.
No, but
yeah, when Golish and the team are on the ice, I mean, dang it.
But no, but when he talked about the changes that he is wanting with this team and says, quote, "We're going to play really fast at times. The ball is going to get out quick, but formationally, we've evolved," which brings a little bit of relief because it shows that, okay, Golish has success, but he realizes that things still have to change and adapt with the times. He says, "What we've run schematically in the run game and the pass game has evolved, and that is what has been year to year," which shows that, okay, it's not some sort of system that you feel so confident in that you can only run that one thing. You look at the guys that are on your team, whether that's offensively or defensively, and you almost fit your system offensively around those guys. Do you still want to have a understanding and a base on what is going to be run? Yes. But obviously with Byron Brown, you realize that things are opened up just a little bit more. But in the next couple of years, it's nice to know that you're not only going to get the perfectly square peg for your square offense, you're going to be able to make some adjustments and evolve, is the word that he continued to use in this article that we're reading right now.
And when he says we, he's obviously talking about him and his staff during their days at South Florida,
yes,
right? And how they have evolved during the several years they were there. Joel Gordon being a part of that as well, Auburn's new offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach for this upcoming season. And so want to hear from fans their thoughts on Auburn and whether they're buying it, whether they believe it, whether they think it can happen with a faster, better, more efficient offense for Auburn football. And what does that mean? What does that lead to? Does Auburn win games that they lost last year because of a better offense? Probably, but just want to hear your confidence level here in the middle of February. 334-321-1390. A couple of texts we got in the text box, again at 784-1067. Spectre says me, would not be able to handle living in the Northwest where the rainy season, it's always raining 24-7. Brother, you will never find me in Seattle, Washington. The city is beautiful, but I ain't living there. Heck no. I don't know if it's as bad as they make it out to be on TV and in the movies and stuff, but I have a buddy that lives out there, and he says it rains quite a bit, and so I'm good. I'm good. I'm just not a fan of rain, dude. I don't know. It dampens everything. It rains on your parade. Get it? It really does. It just ruins a day for me.
That was good, right?
I had to drive in it this morning. Dude, it was flooding this morning. Flooding on the way to Montgomery. To the point where you had people with the hazards on, it got pretty bad, I will admit, but
the jersey combos on the ice right now are not necessarily appealing.
they're not contradicting. They are very similar. They're the same. Same, but different is what's happening. You have the Americans in a white top, blue pants with blue and red stripes. You've got the Slovakians with a white, red, and blue top and blue pants. Dude, this hurts. You'd have to take me off the broadcast. I wouldn't be able to do
it. It's like when you match up with your buddies in college football, but you're both wearing your alternate uniforms, and they look the exact same.
Dude, that's brutal. Another text we got in the text box, talking football and combining basketball as well. This is impressive. It says, which game is bigger for the long-term direction of the program? Is it men's basketball this Saturday versus Kentucky? That's tomorrow. Or is it the opener for Auburn football against Baylor in Atlanta? I'll read the question again. Which game is bigger for the long-term direction of the respected program? Is it basketball tomorrow versus Kentucky? Or is it football's season opener against Baylor? Both year one head coaches, one of them coming down the stretch of their first season. The other one will be kicking off their first season. It's a unique question.
Very much so.
And I don't think it's apples to apples, but I think it can be compared, and I think it can be answered.
My answer is football. My answer is Alex Golish in Atlanta, year one.
Getting off to the right start?
Correct. And
interesting.
We learned that getting off to a hot start and a win against Baylor doesn't necessarily mean that coaching has changed like we thought that it might have meant.
Right.
But with the Auburn-Kentucky game tomorrow evening, both teams already are who they are. And I think even a win, although it can lead to a rally, doesn't necessarily change my overall opinion for this season as a whole. And by no means is that a negative statement towards Steven. It's just more so you're at the point of give him a team that he brought to Auburn rather than, again, got kind of handcuffed to, and brings a little bit more excitement back to the football field.
I'm going to zoom out a little bit. Several people texted and said their answer is Baylor for Auburn football. Again, the question being which game and which win would be more significant for the future success of the program, basketball tomorrow against Kentucky or football in the opener against Baylor. I want to zoom out and include multiple games in that conversation and say that I think it's more important for Auburn basketball to finish strong in the last few games than it is as important for Auburn football to start strong in their first few games. Here's what I mean by that. For Auburn football, we have no idea what to expect from Auburn or from Baylor. DJ Lagway, did he score? 1-0 good guys. God, we're not even 5 minutes into the game. At 4:19, baby. Oh, yeah. Americans up 1-0. Here's what I mean. For Auburn football, we don't know what to expect from the Tigers. We don't know what to expect from Baylor. We have no idea what that game is going to bring. It's a new quarterback for both sides, right? Byron Brown on one side, DJ Lagway on the other, right? Auburn football can overcome a first game loss against Baylor. Not ideal. Not ideal, right? Because we're already talking with this Auburn football schedule that we have an opportunity, we being Auburn, the Tigers have an opportunity to start hot. Baylor in a home game in Atlanta, Southern Miss, Florida, and Vanderbilt.
Yeah, if you beat Baylor, you're staring down the barrel of 4-0.
3-1 at worst, yes. I think. And I think that should be the expectation.
Sure.
For basketball, and I think, you can overcome a loss to Baylor. In the first game of Golish's career, are we really going to ride him and rail him and say that, oh, it's over, this guy sucks, it's terrible, this was a wrong hire, right? I don't think so. But I fear that if Auburn basketball were to lose tomorrow and continue down this losing stretch, tomorrow would be 6 in a row. 6 in a row. To where the new bracketology today says you're already on the verge of the bubble and you continue to lose, you're going in the wrong direction. You keep losing games, the tournament committee is not going to put you in. And I think year one for Stephen Pearl missing the tournament altogether, I think would be more detrimental to the basketball program than Golish losing his first game against Baylor for the Auburn football program. That's where I stand. So that's kind of my answer to that. I think it's a fascinating question, though. Again, which game means more? Which win would mean more? Auburn basketball versus Kentucky tomorrow for the future success of the program, or Auburn football against Baylor in the season opener coming up in the fall? We'll take a break. We'll come back. We got the phone lines are hot, and we'll get to those when we come back. Free for All Friday continues after this.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader and home of Auburn women's basketball.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, let's get to the phone lines here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. They're open for you. They're also open for John in Wetumpka. What's going on, my man? We appreciate you holding on through the break. You are on the line.
Yes, great to be on with you. A couple of things. First of all, in my estimation, it probably, to me anyway, it means more for Stephen Pearl to win tomorrow than Golish to win the first game.
Okay.
Now, to the lion's share of Auburn people, in general, and you know, my biggest problem through all of the difficulties that we've had in football and other sports and everything that we're dealing with, I don't have as much of a problem with the players or with even the coaches as I do the way the fans act and their rhetoric along the way. That's the biggest problem I have.
For a sport in particular or just Auburn fans in general?
Well, just like, you know, whichever one it is that is having a downside at the time. When we went through Gus, he was the worst coach that had ever been in the history of the world, and we, nobody could be worse than him.
Right.
I don't know how many people. We found out it could be worse than him.
Yeah, you're right about that. And you know, I think Auburn fans have fallen into that trap, John. I do. But I think that has just – I think that disease has just infected every fan base in the country because of the world we live in of instant gratification, right? And when you don't get that, right, when there's not instant success and any sort of failure or lack of competition or whatever, right, then fans just lose their minds because they expect greatness all the time.
Yeah, and they one of the things, too, that somehow they get the idea that in any fandom, if you don't win the national championship, then your year was a disaster and it wasn't even worth playing.
There's no middle ground
and
anymore.
Championship or nothing.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, with football players, for example, if they didn't win a Super Bowl, they were never a good player at all. I don't care what their stats are. I don't care how many games they won, or if they never won a World Series, well, they sucked as a baseball player.
Or the fact of when you do rank those players, you have to almost throw in that asterisk of how many Super Bowls or whatever they won.
Right. Which, of course, that's important. It doesn't mean you're a better fan because you say you want to win a championship. Everybody wants to win a championship. That goes without saying. That's the ultimate goal. But it doesn't mean your whole program or your coach is a disaster if you don't win it all one year. Which, you know, I've been alive 62 years. I've seen Auburn in football win one. I'm not looking for it this year either.
Right.
But I hope we have a good season where we're competitive and where it's fun to watch and entertaining.
I agree. And I would hope a lot of Auburn fans could share that feeling, John.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I am. I have to mention this, too, before I go. Today's the first day of spring training in baseball.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
It is, and I'm a huge baseball fan, and it is a bittersweet situation because this is my first one without my dad, who he and I talked about it daily. When the Braves were playing, even in spring training, we went spring training together in Florida, and we went to Cooperstown together. And, of course, growing up, I went to all kinds of minor league games and Auburn games and some Braves games too. But, you know, he was my – that was one of our ties.
Yeah, that's awesome.
A part of our family.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, John, I appreciate you sharing that. I hate that this is the first season that you're going through that without him, but hopefully you're able to enjoy that. And you know he's watching with you anyway. You know that. And you'll be able to enjoy the baseball season for sure.
I hate it. I'm going to miss out when I got a phone call when Atlanta screwed up. He was a lot more about that than he was about us winning.
Right.
I don't know. That's just the way he worked with it.
Well, hey, we can get your number, and Christian will call you anytime the Braves screw up.
I was about to say,
do that.
John, I promise if you tune in here daily with baseball season going on, man, let us fill that void. Yeah. Be a caller all the time, man. We'll talk baseball whenever you want.
I appreciate the offer. I really do.
I'm telling you what, with college baseball in Auburn, and I will happily make fun of the Braves with you and whoever else you want, because I promise I'm in that boat as well.
Yeah, and this last game we had was not any fun at all whatsoever.
Yep, spring training is underway. You got to be a little easy on the Braves in spring training, though, John.
Oh, spring training's just for fun. It's great. If you haven't gone, you need to go.
Oh, yeah.
It is a great experience. It really is. It's relaxed and easy going, but you can travel around and, you know, you're not crowded up and you don't have to fight the huge crowds and that kind of thing. I just absolutely loved it. Cooperstown, for a real baseball fan, that's the place to be. They haven't screwed up the town with corporate America, thank goodness.
Understand that. John, we appreciate the call. We appreciate you listening, sure. My friend.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. John down in Wetumpka, appreciate you hopping on the phone line, sharing a cool nugget there about baseball season and his dad as well. Let's get to the phone lines once again. We got a couple of minutes, 334-321-1390. Andy, you're on the line. I got a couple of minutes for you, man. What's going on?
I hope I don't need that many, but just to be a devil's advocate to John, was it?
Yes.
And I agree with him. So this is just devil's advocate.
Okay.
Just the other day, I posted on something after a basketball game. And I was like, be easy on Coach. I mean, he just got this team. It was a team put together. Just everything you've been saying. No one was on this team last year except one person.
Mm-hmm.
And their coach quit on them right before the year started, right? So to put this all on Steve Pearl is just crazy. I mean, just the hate. I mean, I get it. I give him a hard time, but just the stuff on social media, the hate. And I don't know if John knows this, but there is a generation born about 25 years ago that they think it's cool to be trolls, where his generation was probably trained to be kind. And even if you don't, if you don't have anything to say, don't say it at all. But there's a generation of trolls. So a mixture of them and, just a rough season. But also the devil's advocate part is, I was calling in when we're talking about paying players a couple years ago.
Sure.
And I was so against it, just like I believe you guys are too. And the biggest thing was, I was like, if one team did it, it'd be great because that team would be really good. But when every team does it, it's just going to be like the NFL, and you're going to have that, North Carolina's or the Raiders. You're going to have this team paying their players millions of dollars, but they're going to lose every game. And that's just hard as a fan to wrap your mind around, that, like, this punk that threw an interception or dropped the ball or, hit this guy and got fouled out and now can't play. This punk who's making more than I'll ever see at the age of 18 – I mean, that's our fantasies, to have that kind of money at 18. I mean, you go buy a nice car, and it's just a fantasy.
Yeah.
We can't do that as dads and stuff. Even if we want to, we can't buy a damn Ferrari because the kid's going to put a dent in it with his bicycle in the garage. So these kids are living our dreams, and then they're losing for us? You mix that anger with the trolls, with the
Right.
It has gotten very bad on social media, and it's unfortunate, but we created this monster. So I just wanted to throw that on there. That's probably the why he's seeing that hate. And
yeah. No, I totally get it. Andy, good to hear from you, my friend, as well. And all valid points from John, from Andy. We got people texting in as well. Spectre, he said, instant gratification. I've been waiting for 5 years, which I get that, Spectre. You're absolutely right. Auburn fans are impatient, yes, but for good reason, I think. And again, back to John, cool nugget there. He is right about spring training. Someone texted in, don't worry, the Red Sox are winning 18-2. Over Northeastern University. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Keep an eye on the Red Sox, baby. We're back after this. Cool interview. Another coach joins us right after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
Rolling right along here on the free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line. Christian Griffin, Jacob Goins here with you on ESPN 106.7. And a team that's rolling right along in SEC play, about to get started, is Auburn men's tennis. 7-1 overall, coming off a statement road win at number 16 Clemson. Now turning their attention to a big weekend at the Yarbrough Tennis Center. Auburn opens up with Florida, the 15th-ranked team, at home. The Citadel in there as well. And joining us now, the man in charge, his 10th season on the Plains, a former SEC Player of the Year, Coach Bobby Reynolds. Coach, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, again, we wanted to dive in, be able to spend a lot of time. We've had you on here a time or two before, but right in the heart of SEC play, or about to get started with SEC play, rather. Wanted to be able to spend a little bit of time and get to know you, get to know a little bit of your team, and just to give you the opportunity to be able to talk a little bit about them and talk about what you want to see from this team working your way towards Southeastern Conference play. And so 7-1 through, is it non-conference play essentially, as everything gets started right now? What stands out to you the most about where your team is at right now?
Yeah, we've had a great out of conference season. Really the first 4-6 weeks of the spring schedule is indoor play most of the time.
Okay.
Kind of leading up to national indoors. We fell a little short at Mississippi State. That was the host site. Had a real good chance and an opening to knock them off at home, but fell a little short there. but took the momentum and into Clemson the following weekend with a great win on the road, a great team that made the national indoors, and really kind of the end of our quote unquote indoor season leading into SEC play.
Yeah, well, a 5-2 road win at Clemson really jumps off the page when you're looking at your non-conference schedule. What did you learn about your team in that match specifically? And then from the fall to now, where have you seen the biggest growth with this team?
I think we came out really strong. I think the Mississippi State match, as I talk about, gave us a lot of confidence, right? A team that's top five, top seven in the country. To have a route and a path to getting a win, obviously ultimately coming up short, I think gave our guys a lot of confidence. And that's what it's about right now, right? Is going out on the court, feeling good with your game, with, you know, how you're going to be successful individually as a singles and doubles player, and then ultimately going out and competing, right? And we all know in the sports industry and athletic industry, when you have confidence, right, usually you end up playing pretty well. Yeah. and having success. So that's what these first eight matches have been about, getting a doubles point and then going in and feeling confident with the singles and allowing ourselves to just open up and play freely.
Well, before we dive into some of the singles and the doubles on the player side of things, you mentioned just that confidence as a coaching standpoint. How much focus do you put on making sure those players have the confidence to go out and perform? And then, as you mentioned, like, what does that mean for each of your individual players, knowing that, okay, we've done this before, I can go out and we can win some of these matches? What does that mean with the confidence standpoint with this coaching staff?
Yeah, we have a lot of guys that are returners, right? Mature guys that have played college tennis, guys that have been in our system for a couple years. Right?
Sure.
So I think that's naturally just going to give them more confidence. But also, we're heavy on the development side, right? So a lot of our practices and what we're doing on the weeks off or the non-matches, I think is giving the guys confidence so that when they step out on the court, they have the tools, they have their weaknesses, their strengths, right? And then ultimately, it's a chess game from there. It's one versus one. And making sure that you're using your strengths more than they're, you know, attacking your weaknesses, right? And I think we've done a really, really good job over my tenure here of developing players, right? Making them better, that ultimately will bring success to them most of the time later on in their career.
We're looking at the singles and the doubles. You hear a lot about Mr. Hosma on the singles side of things, the Blades brothers on the doubles side of things. And so what makes those guys thrive in their individual sets, their individual times when they're on the court?
Yeah, well, the Blades brothers for sure. Obviously, growing up together, they've played a lot of doubles together. And doubles is a relationship thing when you're out on the court, right? How do you complement each other? A lot of also is, you know, playing the different sides of the court. Some players are better on the forehand side or the backhand side. So ultimately, when you get somebody and a team like the Blades who have been playing, you know, for the better part of 4-6 years, even back home, they're naturally going to fit together better and quicker. So not only that, but they also complement each other very well, right? And with the return side, with the serve side. So I think it took them a little bit of time throughout the fall. Obviously, Freddie's joining us from Georgia, you know, and playing his last 2 years here at Auburn and wanting to play with his brother. I think that put a little pressure on both of them. Okay, man, we have to succeed quickly, you know, and that was never part of the game plan, right? Obviously, it's going to take time to settle in and do that. So we started to see, and they started to see a lot of their success in the later half of the fall semester, and obviously carried it over very quickly into the spring. And that gives our 2 and 3 team less pressure on them, right? If you know you have a number one team that it can go out and is one of the best teams in the country, that just takes the pressure off 2 and 3. Yes, they want to win. They have the same expectations, but you don't feel like you have the pressure on you. And then right into Hamza, right? Played number 5 for us. I think he's one of the most electric tennis players that you will probably ever see, right? And when I sit on the court with him and I'm coaching, a lot of times I'm blown away at what he can do, right? And it's exciting, right? Because he's still a sophomore. He's still, you know, kind of getting into things. He's only been here a little over a year, right? He was a mid-year for us last year. So excited for where he's at right now, excited for what he's been able to accomplish, but even more so than that, of where the growth and where he can become in another year or two.
head coach of Auburn men's tennis, Bobby Reynolds, here with us on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line. And coach, we appreciate your time again as well. You mentioned the key pieces that you have. You also have more depth than you've had in years past. How much flexibility does that give you when you're looking at the games week to week or even game to game, as we have the doubleheader coming up here tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah, depth is always huge in a coach's position, right? Because you never know, right? Whether it be injury, whether it be sickness, whether it be a little bit loss of confidence, just a lot of things that go into when you're making up a lineup. But I think even bigger than that, right, is as I talked about earlier, it's that training environment that we have, right? We have 9-10 guys depth-wise. So every single time we're, team practice, individual practice, right, we're just getting better. Everybody's getting better because of that depth. But specifically, like you talked about this weekend, right? It's allowing guys to have opportunities to play. It's allowing them to continue to hone in their skills during match play. And that's a great thing for a coach, is to be able to have the depth, but also be able to look at opponents that we're going to play. And now we are able to match up a little bit, right? Sure. Hey, you know, what does Florida look like at 4, 5, and 6? Can we maneuver our 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 to match up very well against some of those, you know, opponents that we're going to play? So it just gives us more tools in the bag as coaches and as a program to be successful.
A really tough non-conference play again coming off a road win at Clemson. You now start SEC play with a top 15 Florida team. What makes this league such a grind compared to a non-conference play where you get some of those confidence building wins rather than when you look at the SEC and look at the schedule, the gauntlet that you have? We talk about it in just about every single sport, how dominant the Southeastern Conference is.
Yeah, there's nothing like it, right? I know every sport, right, talks about that when we sit in coaches' meetings. It's what we play for, right? It's what these guys signed up for. Every Friday, Sunday, you're playing probably a top 30 team in the country, right, when it's all said and done. Obviously, and with our ranking system, it takes a little while for all that to kind of filter out. But you'll see at the end of the year that probably 12 to 13 of our 14 matches are going to be against top 30 teams. So there is no hiding spots, right? There is no ability to have letdowns. And that's what ultimately is going to make these guys the players that they want to be, right? They're coming to college because they're not quite ready for the ATP tour, right? And that's it's an okay thing, right? And this is what's going to prepare them for life after, you know, college tennis. And when you're traveling out there, you know, 35 weeks a year, there is not an off week. There's not an off match. So this is just part of that preparation. And it's what they sign up for, and it's what gets us as coaches, you know, our juices flowing.
Auburn looks to continue their dominance at home in the Yarbrough Center. Once again, a very, very tough place to play, yes, with the talent, but the environment as well. Talk a little bit about the crowds when they come and they watch your team play. How much does your team feed off of the energy that comes outside the court?
Yeah, we have guys that just absolutely raise their game, right? I think the unique thing about college tennis is, you know, growing up as a junior, you play individually, and then all of a sudden you come to college and you got 4 years of playing as a team.
Sure. Yeah.
And from a coaching staff, and when we recruit, we're looking for those type of players that will rise just in that environment, right? Obviously, we know from the development and the tennis standpoint, that's also going to get better, but who can really thrive playing as a team and step up? And we have a couple of those guys, right? So yes, our guys feed off the crowd. We feed off the environment of playing college tennis. And I think the unique thing also with our success at home is just the style of courts and the style of players that we have on our home courts, right? They're a little bit more bouncy. They're a little bit slower conditions, right? So most opposing teams coming in only have a day, 2 days to prepare. And that's how it is. That's what, you know, playing on the road versus home is a huge advantage, because every outdoor tennis court is slightly different. And our guys love the grind. They love the long points. And like I said, getting the crowd involved as it builds and builds and builds.
That's really cool to think about. You don't necessarily think about the courts being a little bit different, but makes sense when, I mean, you're looking at SEC basketball right now and how every home gym is a little bit different, whether it be the lights or when you look at some of the stadiums that have the crowds a little backed away. It's a really cool thought that you actually don't really think about when you think about the tennis side of things. And so for someone that is making their way out to Yarbrough Center here for the first time this season, what do you want them to walk away from learning about this Auburn men's team?
I just, you know, these guys, you're going to see them later on, you know, on TV at some point. And it's in a great place where it doesn't matter. You want to come out with a dog, you want to come out with your kids. Like, there's no tennis rules in college tennis, right? Like, you can scream, you can yell at any point, right? The kids can run around outside. And it's just a great environment for, you know, families and just people to stop by and see how good these guys are at what they're doing day in, day out.
Free desserts.
Free food.
That makes it where, I mean, that sells itself. Hopefully that brings a little bit more juice to the crowd, right? I mean, what more could you play for than that?
Oh, exactly.
Well, Coach, your 10th season here at Auburn. Wanted to ask a couple of just the personal side of things. Of you, you talk about players learning and adapting every single year. As a coach, you continue to learn and adapt as well, how you strategize players differently. What's something you've learned about yourself this year and how you like to coach some of these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just what you spoke about, right? I think you come in as a young coach and you have your philosophy and that's what you're going to do. But also adapting to kids these days and just every single year as you go on. I think, you know, I've been more adaptive to, you know, individual needs, right? Every guy is not going to prepare the day before a match the same way,
sure,
right? So it's helping them find what is going to make them successful, right? Some guys need to practice an extra 2 or 3 hours so that they feel good. Some guys need to maybe only hit like an hour, you know, and just get a good feel good hit so they come out. But ultimately, you know, when they step out on the court for matches, they have to be emotionally, mentally, and physically prepared, right? So it's how do we as coaches best get them ready for those three facets of competition.
And this being Auburn's 75th year this year, celebrating a little bit of history, what does that mean to you to be able to not only continue to make history like you've done over the past couple of years, but continue to view what history is going to look like with Auburn men's tennis?
Yeah, I mean, I think the coaches and the programs that have come before me have set a great foundation for us. Just where Auburn is in the athletic department and all the resources that they're able to provide these student athletes is growing every single year. And I think when you talk to student athletes, they understand and they appreciate that. So, you know, I'm excited for where we're going, right? We have all the resources that we need. We're able to recruit the best talent in the world right now. So, you know, we have a good foundation, but I'm excited really for the next 2, 3, 4 years and the guys that we're bringing in along with the guys that are currently on the team of where this program will be next year. And like I said, going forward.
Auburn's men's tennis head coach, Bobby Reynolds. Coach, we appreciate your time as always. Again, your final pitch for anybody that's just now tuning in. Why should they be watching your team here this weekend?
And you know, these guys are going to do something great this year. So I'm excited for what's to come and happy to have everybody out at the courts every single weekend.
Coach Bobby Reynolds here joining us on the Free For All Friday edition of On The Line. The Auburn Tigers open SEC play on Saturday at noon, taking on number 15 Florida at the Yarbrough Tennis Center with a 5 p.m. match later in that same day, taking on the Citadel. And again, admission is free. And you can stream it on auburntigers.com. And again, free desserts while supplies last, as if you needed any more reason to head out to the Yarbrough Tennis Center. Coach, we appreciate your time. We'll take a break, come back, and continue on here on the Free For All Friday edition of On The Line.
This is Ian Fitzsimmons from ESPN Radio, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to head coach Bobby Reynolds of Auburn men's tennis. We've had a flurry of coaches in over the past couple of weeks, and he is another one. So we appreciate him coming in earlier today, talking with Christian, and big things happening for Auburn men's tennis. Let's get to the phone lines as we wrap up hour number one, 334-321-1390. Anthony in Auburn, you're on the line, my man. I got a few minutes for you. What's up?
How's it going?
It's going good, man.
Got about three things. I just got off work, man, about 40 minutes ago, and just thought about calling you guys.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to. I read what Coach DeVinny, who used to coach Auburn High, back in the days, passed away. I actually saw him coach, which I'm from Opelika, but I saw several games where he coached. Had real good teams. I think Big John Brandt, that used to run on the Supper Club. He was on one of the good teams. But like I said, I just wanted to give my condolences for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is How deep is the Auburn running back going to be? Is Omar Mathis going to be still in the picture?
Yeah. That room is going to be deep, man. You've got Jeremiah Cobb coming back. You've got Bryce Washington from Baylor, who was their RB1. You still have Omar Mapson. You still have Alvin Henderson. And then the Troy kid also is in there for Auburn. So five different running backs.
As well as Nakia Davenport from South Florida as well.
So six. You got six running backs in there that you can use at your disposal.
Okay, did y'all got any update on C.J. Johnson from Opelika signing with anybody? I saw all the signing, but I haven't seen anything on him.
I don't know off the top of my head. I can tell you from watching him in person, that dude is a baller. That dude can play some football. I tell you what, I haven't seen if he officially signed anywhere or not. I don't think he has by a quick Google search, but yeah, that's a talented kid, and whoever picks him up, Anthony, is going to be very happy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. I wish we had another year with him. The last thing, do y'all have an update on the Opelika basketball score?
I do not. I know they were starting about, 1:30 or 2 o'clock if everything was on schedule. Yeah. I don't have an update right now, but our buddy Van Riggs is on the air. I forget what station they're airing basketball on, but I'll try to find an update for you and plug that for you, okay?
I appreciate that. All right, guys. Nice talking to you, and continue to listen. Y'all take care.
Appreciate it, Anthony. Thanks so much for listening and being a part of the show here at the end of hour number one, 334-321-1390.
Let me log into the old NFHS, and we'll see if there's anything for
that game. I mean, that game may be probably near over. If it was supposed to start at 1:30 for the Opelika boys, they were taking on Dothan at 1:30. Game has not gone final yet. Wow. Enterprise beat Central. Wow. That's a good Enterprise team, though, for the boys anyway, in 7A boys action. Enterprise beat Central this morning. They were starting right as I was leaving for Auburn High Girls this morning down in Montgomery. 57-43, the Enterprise boys beat Central Phoenix City. They await the winner of that Opelika-Dothan game.
And looking at it right now, it was Dothan up 37-28 with 6 minutes to play.
Wow. That's a defensive slugfest. That's an Opelika team that ended up winning the area tournament last week.
Holy cow. Yeah, let me
make sure. After beating Auburn High, they ended up beating Central at Central to win the area tournament.
Let me make sure this is 37-28. There's 7 minutes to play at Alabama State.
Man, between Opelika and Dothan in the boys game? Yeah. How about that? That's wow. So the area 3 is what Enterprise and Dothan are out of. They have a chance to sweep area 4. Wow. That's crazy. So there you go, Anthony. I appreciate you calling in. We got about a minute or so, and a great question about the running back room for Auburn football because, yeah, man, it's going to be loaded. I mean, Auburn has anybody and anybody that they want to use in any sort of back, any type of back. You obviously hope and pray for no injuries, but they are inevitable, unfortunately, in a long season like you play in the SEC. But Auburn has a good problem in finding out what the rotation is. You expect Jeremiah Cobb to be RB1. You expect it to be Washington as RB2. And after that, it's a free-for-all, man. Who's going to get the reps? Who's going to step up? You like to think Omar Mapson, our Auburn High boy, is going to be in the mix. He played good football last year.
He did, yeah. And again, as we head to break, just reading this real fast, South Florida averaged 208 rushing yards per game. Auburn averaged right around 167. South Florida averaged 5.2 yards per rush. Auburn just over 4. And so goes back to the very first thing that we talked about with Coach Golish, planning to bring speed and planning to run the football because he said, quote, we plan on running the out of the football.
There you go. You know who won't be running the football this year or throwing the football? Joey Aguilar has been denied. He will not be eligible to play for Tennessee in 26. For now.
Give it 3 more weeks.
For now, hour number one's in the books. Hour two coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on. On the Line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn, Opelika, sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here in hour number two. And if you missed any of hour number one, we had a lot of fun. We actually talked some Auburn football in the first hour of today's show with some fiery quotes from head coach Alex Golish, as he claims Auburn's going to run the ball. They're going to move faster. They're going to be more exciting. So we talked about that and what that could look like. Also had a good interview with head coach Bobby Reynolds of Auburn men's tennis, Christian did today. So had that in the first hour as well. Good phone calls, good text as well. So all of that in hour number one. If you missed it, you could check it out on our station website in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we reserved it for the hardwood, as Auburn and Kentucky doing battle tomorrow evening. And my goodness, what better way to bring in the introduction for the man that you know quite well, and man, good buddy of ours. We see him in the press box quite often. We got our man Lance Daw here with us in the studio. It's the first time ever, Lance, that Jacob put an exclamation point in our rundown. He says, Lance Daw in studio, exclamation points.
We're so back.
I mean,
so unbelievably back. Oh my gosh.
Yes, Lance Daw, the host of Locked On Kentucky, is here, also covers Auburn as well. My friend, it is great to see you, great to have you, and no better time to do it than with what some folks say a meaningless basketball game tomorrow.
Here's the problem from the Kentucky side of things, and a lot of beat writers have been writing about this, and we'll get into the matchup and everything. This feels like a desperation game, at least from the Kentucky side, for both teams, and that scares Kentucky more than anything, because, like, here we go again, on the road against a team that needs this for their NCAA tournament life. It's like, what do we have to do to just get a game against a mindless SEC team that we can finally beat that doesn't, like, want to try and kill us because it's their Super Bowl? It'd be really nice to have that. But unfortunately, we got to go into Neville and we got to find a way to win.
Hey, well, I mean,
I say we.
Kentucky, I mean, according to some comments last year for football season, I mean, they're a better program, right? I mean, so
I forgot about that. Oh, man. There were some comments made on the internet.
Right into the fire.
We're trying to figure out who did this, who said that Kentucky football was a better program at the time, and then they went on the road and beat Auburn and Jordan-Hare, which...
It's like those darn people that vote for Vanderbilt at SEC Media Days to win the conference. Like, imagine being that person.
For 3 years in a row. No.
One of four.
We got close. We got close, baby. That's all that matters. I'm excited for this, man. I'm excited. We'll be there. I'm assuming y'all will be there tomorrow as well. This is going to be a big one. This is going to be my first time in Neville this season. So I'm really excited to see what Auburn pulls out there in terms of vibes and energy. I'll tell you, it's been really low in Rupp, so it'll be nice to see a big-time environment here.
I know we'll dive into this matchup in Kentucky as a whole, but just speaking kind of generically to the Auburn fan base, are they in a similar spot to Kentucky's fan base? Do they look at the SEC as a whole and realize how drunk the conference is and realize, okay, maybe a loss here and there isn't so bad? Or is Kentucky kind of like those parents of, son, I don't care that everybody else failed the math test, You did as well, and that's not good enough. Is Kentucky's standard right now still above and beyond looking at everybody else in the SEC?
Yeah, I think that it really does depend on which fan you talk to.
Sure.
If you go look at my comment section or just go browse Twitter, you'll see every person saying, I don't care if we have two players available. We should win every game regardless of what happens. And it depends on, again, what fan you talk to. There will be a lot of crazy people that say it doesn't matter the circumstances. We're going to find a way to win. But there are some more sober-minded people out there, and this is something that I've tried to promote, you know, talking about the Wildcats whenever I get the opportunity to just say, hey, the reality is college basketball is a little weird this year. The SEC, yeah, very much so. We don't know what's going to happen on a game-to-game basis, especially with this Kentucky team. Extremely volatile and unpredictable. You can kind of see that in their most recent game against Georgia, where you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I think that more reasonable people will realize it's a box of chocolates. You don't know what you're going to get at night in and night out. And while that sucks for Kentucky fans to hear because they expect perfection,
sure,
every single game, it's just the reality, and we have to find a way to live with it.
Well, we have so much to talk about in the second hour of today's show. It's all college basketball. Again, Lance Dahl, the host of Locked On Kentucky, with us in the studio for the entire second hour. Phone lines are open as well. So if you have thoughts and comments about the game tomorrow inside of Neville Arena, a pick, a prediction, a feeling for tomorrow, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Also, any other team or any other game going on in the SEC, college basketball, updated bracketology as well. And Lance, I think we need to start there because the SEC still getting love in today's bracketology, but I don't really know why. I can't figure it out because clearly the SEC, and you just said it, it's got holes. It's not as good as it was last year. It's not even close. It may be the third or fourth best conference in the P5 of college basketball right now.
Something I've continued to say, especially as the season winds down now, is that I am a huge proponent for computer models, right? Like, I love Ken Pom. I love Evan Mia.
Yeah.
I love Torvik. I love looking at these numbers and kind of predicting what I want to say based off of that. Ken Pom currently says that the SEC is the best team in the conference in the country. Best conference in the country, and it's not particularly close, and I'm just sitting here like, I can't trust it. I can't, because when you watch this conference, there's one quote-unquote elite team, and even that team has its flaws, where I don't necessarily know if I trust Florida to make a Final Four, to make it Elite Eight, because of their poor shooting and lack of ability to turn their opponents over. So it is wild to me that, you know, the committee, these computer models continue to say that the SEC is by far the best conference in the country. And I'm like, you have to watch these games and realize, like, this is a shell of what it was a season ago. And I'll just say this real quick. From the Kentucky perspective, and honestly, from this should be the same for the Auburn perspective as well, because Stephen Pearl was handed the keys to a Ferrari, basically. At least it feels like that from outside looking in. This is a conference that you could have taken advantage of this season,
yeah,
where it's like, I said that coming into the year, like, that's why I thought Kentucky was going to steamroll, because, you know, the expectation with their deep roster was to make a run at a national title.
Is that the word? Not like expensive, just very deep roster. That's the way to go about it.
You know, the $22 million could be the words that are thrown out when describing what this team is.
Words, numbers, exact dollar amounts.
Exact dollar amounts. Who's really counting, dude? That was September. What are we doing? Anyway, the expectation was for somebody like Auburn, somebody like Kentucky, to take advantage of this league and just steamroll it, and
yeah,
that has not been the case. It has been a dogfight for a lot of teams, and it's been pretty underwhelming. I don't get the bracketology love at all.
Well, looking at it right now, again, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago when there were 9 teams projected into the tournament, and we were expecting that to be lower than that. It's gone up to 10, and most today, 11 projected teams in the SEC are, at least again, expected or projected to make the tournament right now. Because of Missouri's win, they moved to the last 4 in rather than the first team out. And so you wonder if that has a little bit of say, just because the conference beats up on itself. It's almost the old school SEC West of, man, this is still one of the best conferences, but
yeah,
you only have that Florida team who's able to kind of edge out the rest of the conference because of how good everybody is in that tier list that we've talked about all season long. If you don't have 4 or 5 teams that beat up on everybody, yet you go and look at the conference and 500 in SEC play doesn't necessarily match the 500 in a couple of these other conferences. But 11 teams to make the tournament right now, with Missouri being the last four in, and then Texas A&M and Auburn the last four byes.
And Lance, we had this question the other day, and I want to get your thoughts as well. Let's say 11 teams make the NCAA tournament from the SEC,
okay,
which I don't think they will. I don't think they should. How many of those teams right now, if you're looking at the bracket, if the tournament started tomorrow, how many of those teams make the second weekend? How many of those teams make the Sweet 16? How confident are you if I hand you the orange $500 Monopoly bill, right? Yeah. How many of those teams are you? Yeah. How many of those teams? I'll give you change out of the bank. How many of those teams are you putting money on right now to make the Sweet 16 from the SEC? Because our number was fairly low.
I'll give you two answers to this question. My gut response to that, which is the lame answer, is it really just does depend on the matchups. I would like to see who they play before I give you an answer to that. But if we're just looking at them today, I would say three that make it to the second weekend that I would feel confident, like, okay, they should be a better matchup, especially considering their possible seed line than whoever they face. Florida, I think, would be the obvious one. Mm-hmm. I would take Arkansas because of how athletic and explosive that team is. I just feel like they're a really hard team to keep up with. And if you are some mid-major, I don't know what Arkansas' seed line is right now, or even just like a middling team from another Power Four conference, they're a four seed. Yeah. Okay, so
bumped up.
Arkansas
is actually a five. Apologies.
A five?
Yeah.
Okay. I still would feel good about the Hogs just because of their talent. And then the third, I mean, this could honestly be a rotation between Tennessee, Vandy, Kentucky. It just really does depend on the matchup. I still, despite all of their issues, I think Kentucky can be one of the better teams in the country, because I think that while the personnel is definitely weaker than we expected, the thought process to put together a well-rounded, good team is absolutely there if they try and they have a decent shooting night, which they've been the best three-point shooting team in the SEC so far. But Vandy, Kentucky, Tennessee, you could pick through between one of those three. I think you could make cases for all those, but again, it really would just depend on the matchup. I'd put money on one of those squads, though.
It's funny, though, that, I mean, it's very similar to the answers that we gave. I gave four, you gave three, and then we looked at matchups, and we both jumped up one. I think I went to not quite putting money on five teams, but the opportunity for five teams, and so it'll be interesting looking at this now with the updated bracketology, with Vanderbilt dropping from a four back up to a five. Tennessee goes from a 6 to a 5. A couple of the other teams, Missouri is now again a play-in game. Kentucky awaits one of the play-in games. Continuing down, Georgia, a 10 seed right now. Arkansas, as we mentioned, a 5. Alabama, a 4. Right now, you look at that Tampa region, and how fun would that round of 32 game be if Alabama beats North Carolina, Wilmington, St. John's beats Belmont? You get a rematch with St. John's and Alabama from one of the non-conference games. That one could be a whole lot of fun. If Florida gets this Tampa bracket with Portland State, North Carolina, and Ohio State, it is a Sharpie in for Florida to beat North Carolina in the round of 32.
Especially if Caleb Wilson's not back. I don't know what his timetable is, Lance. I don't know if you know either the timetable on Caleb Wilson, but he's clearly the best player for North Carolina, and I don't trust Ohio State right now to even get to the tournament, much less try to win a game in the tournament.
I feel really bad for Carolina, BYU, and then also Texas Tech, who just lost JT Toppin. Yeah. And I've been saying this, I haven't said it on the show yet, but I've continued to say, like, man, it'd be really sweet if Texas Tech could find a way to hold on to that three seed, just like to be semi-competent from here on out, because you look at where they have Kentucky projected right now. San Diego playing Santa Clara or UCLA. If they win that game, they would more than likely play the Red Raiders without Toppin. I'm like, I would love that. Yeah. I would love that. See if you can take me to the Sweet 16 with Wisconsin, Georgia, or Iowa State coming out of the other side of that region of the bracket. So yeah, it is. I feel like this. Okay. So there have been a lot of takes from analysts recently saying that this is going to be basically the same thing as last year. It's going to be really chalky. It's going to be the top teams, like the top eight teams, just cruising through the bracket. I think this is going to be a really weird year. I think it's going to be a regression to the what on earth is happening, chaos, upsets all over the place. That's kind of my feel.
Well, didn't going into last year, we were like, oh, yeah, upset city, man.
Yeah.
Everybody's even. College basketball's wide open.
I'm taking
and then
the
it ended
double
up being
on that,
4-1
though.
Seeds. Is that what we talked about?
I feel like we felt that until early March, until you saw just about who everybody was.
Maybe so.
And then it was one of the first times that you saw every single analyst on every single platform put all four one seeds in the Final Four, and finally everybody was like, okay, maybe this doesn't seem overly crazy. That being said, even the one seeds right now this year, I would still give the overall nod to, with Houston, Arizona, with Michigan and Duke. But I agree with you, two on, or the second seed on, which is why I talked about if Auburn could get to that seven seed, it makes it a little bit easier just from the standpoint of, because the 8-9 matchup is going to be hell, because there are so many middle of the pack teams right now. If you can get through that, you play a two seed, but those two seeds are a whole lot of a drop off, at least in my opinion, to some of those one seeds. Right now, take your Red Hawks, man. They could upset BYU.
Oh my gosh.
In the first round, and then get Gonzaga in round two. Could you imagine?
Oh, I should have worn my Miami, Ohio hat here today, man.
Hey, man, don't mess with the Red Hawks. Nobody's playing basketball better than Miami. Nobody parties harder than Miami.
And funny enough,
really?
We talked about Auburn needing to get to a seven seed. They didn't get to that.
They took your advice
directly.
They just did it the wrong
but
way.
They're in the matchup. Hey, man, I'll take a game in Buffalo against Villanova of all teams right now, man.
Yeah, and for Auburn to get a 10 seed right now, you can't look at what 2 seed they match up with, because most Auburn fans, and again, phone lines open here in hour 2, 334-321-1390. Text box is open as well at 334-784-1067. Most Auburn fans are, at this point, content, I think, at least somewhat satisfied with even just making the NCAA tournament. Mm. At this point, winning a game in the tournament would be like, okay, that's a win. Sounds good. Ain't nobody worried about the 2-seed matchup, because you're not supposed to win it anyway.
Instead of making it to the second weekend, making it to the weekend.
Yeah,
if you play Thursday and Friday, just make it to Saturday or Sunday.
Which is unfortunate, because going into this season, I think expectations in year one were, yes, make the tournament, but on the high end, I think this team could have been a 4 or 5 seed and could have made a run to the Sweet 16 in year one, but it just hasn't panned out that way. Expectations have changed, and rightfully so. But Auburn can't worry about the tournament yet, because they have Kentucky coming in tomorrow, and it's a night game inside of Neville Arena, and here come the Cats. Our guy Lance Dove, Locked On Kentucky, is in the studio with us. We take a deep dive into the Cats right after this, here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on ESPN 106.7, Free For All Friday. Look at that. The sun has come out in Auburn, Alabama. That means Auburn's winning tomorrow, right? That means that the Tigers are in a good spot to get it done tomorrow against Kentucky. And Lance Dahl of Locked On Kentucky, the daily podcast covering the Wildcats, is going to tell us why that is not going to happen. Lance, we do want to deep dive on the Cats and what they've been up to this season.
So first and foremost, anything that's up is down in Auburn, Alabama. So the sun coming out actually, I think, might be a bad thing for the Tigers here coming in tomorrow. I don't exactly know what the weather's going to be like, but I will tell you again, do you want to break down on the Cats, or you want just my thoughts on the game?
The Cats first. We'll talk the game coming up next.
You want the heart attack first, okay?
Yes, we do.
So coming into the year, as some of you may know, this was expected to be a national title contender. Kentucky was expected to be one of the best teams in the country. KenPom, that I love and adore, said that they were the fourth best team in the country. I believe at one point they got up to the best team in the country before they faced Louisville. And it was very apparent after that Louisville game that the Cats were not nearly as good as we thought they were. And I kind of have to save face and talk on the YouTube show and go like, well, everything's going to be okay because of this, 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 and this. And then they go to a neutral site against Michigan State, and they get blown out against a Michigan State team that I still don't think is very good.
No.
And then you start to realize, okay, we're 3-2. Things are kind of going downhill. We don't have our point guard. Our starting point guard, Jalen Lowe, dislocated his shoulder before the season even began. He dislocated it again during practices after the Louisville game. Our lottery pick center, Jaden Quaintance, who transferred in from Arizona State, was rehabbing from an ACL surgery. He played, I believe, what was it, 3 or 4 games and has not seen the floor since the St. John's matchup or the Bellarmine matchup, if I'm not mistaken. And he probably won't play for the rest of the season, by the way, because his agent's holding him out. They'll tell you it's knee swelling.
I was going to say, so that's not even publicly it's because of injury, but there are conversations of it's his agent that has stepped in.
We are pretty confident that he is just sitting out.
Wow.
And you know what?
And going, I would assume, just going to the draft.
Going to the draft, yeah. Which, by the way, the little that I saw from him this year, I mean, I know it was only a few games, but he looked pretty bad outside of the St. John's game, and I've not said that yet publicly, but he's I would not trust him as a lottery pick, not even close. So we get past Michigan State, you lose at home to North Carolina, you are 5-3, and the sky is falling. I go to Nashville to watch Kentucky play Gonzaga Friday, December 5th. 94-59 is the final score in Nashville. You get drubbed 5-4. Big Blue Nation is calling for Mark Pope's job.
Yes, they
After the Sweet 16 and the honeymoon and all of this great stuff that happened in year one, where everybody felt so emotionally connected to that team and the fun and the ride of beating all of these great teams, going to the Sweet 16, losing to Tennessee, which did suck, but it's all gone. All of the goodwill's gone. You beat Indiana and St. John's. You look really bad doing so. Then you get into SEC play. You start 0-2. You lose to Alabama on the road. You lose to Missouri at home. Missouri's not a tournament team. They're just not. They're not. Even with their recent success, I don't think Missouri is a tournament team. Would you rather have them or Miami, Ohio? Or Akron out of the MAC, for that matter.
The Zips, baby.
The Zips.
For Kentucky's standpoint, though, don't you hope they are? Just for the...
Sure, for the resume
boost.
Not
for the people that watch every single game, but just for those that...
That's fair.
At least bump
Auburn,
it up.
Auburn needs Missouri to be a tournament team.
9-6, 0-2 in SEC play. People are saying, we need this guy fired by the end of the year. I'm questioning on the show, should this be it? Because we can't have... Because throughout all of this, you have all of the failures on the court after you spent so much money on such a deep roster. Mm. Players are hurt. They're not playing well. They can't shoot. The offense looks insanely different than last season, where nothing is happening. All of this is happening. If you go Google Kentucky basketball 2026 recruiting class, you'll find a goose egg. No players. None. You've been linked to the top overall player in Tyron Stokes. You've been linked to a top 5 player in Christian Collins. You had crystal balls to land both of them in October and November. Those have since been removed because Kentucky could not close the deal. I could literally spend an hour today talking about what JMI is, a media like backer for Kentucky in relation to their recruiting issues. We're not going to get into that. Just know that there are a lot of things behind the scenes that are actively screwing Kentucky over, alongside the coach not being willing to get into bidding wars. So you're failing off the court at a place that anyone could find success recruiting. You're failing on the court. The sky is falling. This team sucks. They rattle off 8 of 9. Just out of nowhere, and they start pulling wins out of you know what, where they are down by double digits. I'm talking 14, 15, 17 points against Mississippi State, LSU, Tennessee. They lose to 25 by Vanderbilt in the middle of that, but they are just finding miracles. And now they've lost back-to-back games against Florida and Georgia. One of the games against the Gators where I thought Kentucky actually had a pretty decent matchup, that proved to be true. You just can't turn the ball over 14 times to lead to 25 points. That'll kill you.
Yeah.
And then Georgia at home, that is the one. I'm not going to lie. I said this to somebody before I came here. I've been on tilt since the Florida or Georgia loss on Tuesday because it's like that should not have happened. And so we're back to the volatile. We don't know what this team is as we come down the stretch. And now we play an Auburn team that would kill for a win. So here we are now, just riding the
wave. How funny is that? That both teams are coming off of losses that their fan base and probably their coaches would tell you should not have happened.
Yeah. We texted you, Lance, after the Vanderbilt loss and asked if you had a word or a phrase to describe the Kentucky fan base. It was lost.
Yeah.
How ironic that a couple of weeks later you feel like that is what this game entails inside Neville Arena. Two teams and two fan bases that are just lost with what, maybe not the expectation is, but lost on what is going to happen, what the teams are going to look like.
There's a term that a media group, Split Zone Duo, I don't know if y'all have heard of them, they like to use, anxiety bowl, when it's talking about like a midseason game where like both coaches could get fired. There's a lot on the line. It's really tense for a variety of reasons.
There's not even relief for winning. It's just relief for not losing.
Exactly. This is an anxiety bowl for both these teams. Now, it may not have long-term, like several seasons down the line implications, but for right now, it is about as stressful as it could get for both these squads.
Yeah, and that is tomorrow inside of Neville Arena. Auburn hosting Kentucky. It's the outlive game for the Pearls and for Auburn basketball. So the arena should be full of a bunch of orange shirts. I guess we'll have to wait and see, but we talk about that game when we come back. It's the Cats and the Tigers. We talk about it with Lance Dahl of Locked On Kentucky in the studio. 30 more minutes here on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
Way through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is a packed house here as we get ready for Auburn and Kentucky in basketball. Hey, an update from Italy. The United States is running away with this thing.
It's over.
Yeah, Lance, what are your thoughts?
Are you an Olympics fan, Lance?
All right.
What do you mean? God, get this guy out of here.
What do you
mean?
I'm sorry. I don't want to watch Jamaican bobsledding on a Friday afternoon. I'm trying to like lock in on some college hoops, dude. I'm like John Rothstein.
Chris Gordy. I mean, just.
Gordy has rubbed off on you, man.
No, it's just Gordy not big on.
Gordy says that he would rather watch a Hugh Freeze quarterback throw in practice than watch anything Olympics.
I won't comment on what Gordy has to say, but I will say I do like watching like the bigger events, like hockey. Like I will watch the ice skating whenever I'm like, I know an American is going to be competing, Alyssa Liu. I'm excited whenever that happens. Outside of that, I'm usually watching college basketball this time of year. I'm sorry.
You sleep in May? You said
I sleep in May. Yeah. I don't even sleep in May. Really, honestly, May is whenever you talk about the transfer portal. You know this.
So not anymore.
That's right. Oh, what are we going to do?
You had the basketball portal window.
That's true.
Which I don't even know when that is. I don't remember the updated dates on the basketball portal
window.
It's
actually already happened. The rosters have been put together, Jacob. Where have you been?
Yeah, you're right. There's no spring football window anymore, which is unfortunate.
No, but we get spring games for Auburn and Kentucky, though. Isn't that awesome?
Legitimate spring games, according to Alex Golish. Yeah, is that what Kentucky... Are they going back to a traditional spring game, too?
They are.
Yeah,
they are.
Will Stein, man.
Auburn's 8 a week.
I'm telling you, dude, Will Stein is going to be – I don't know if they're ever going to be – you know, it's Kentucky football. We don't know what that's going to be, but that's a phenomenal hire.
We were talking about it during the break, and I'm like, I have a lot of hope. Like, year one is probably going to be pretty rough just because the schedule is brutal, but I think that there is going to be a baseline consistency from this team on both sides of the ball where you look ahead and say, okay, if they're not coming out the gate firing in year one, like they're going to be a problem down the line.
Because we remember talking about Kentucky. Yeah, they start with Youngstown State before Alabama comes to town in week three. Okay. Then it's at Texas A&M the very next week. South Alabama at home, then to South Carolina, home for LSU, at Oklahoma, home for Vanderbilt. And then the bye week happens where it's then at Tennessee, home for Florida, at Missouri, and back home for Louisville.
I remember their home games being legit, though.
That was about to say. So the cool thing about that is you get Bama and LSU at home to start. You could jump scare one of those teams. I would lean the Crimson Tide, which is the crazy thing to say.
Yeah. Is that just because it's so early and there's so many unknowns with Kentucky?
It's so early, and I think that Bama's more volatile under DeBoer than maybe Kiffin would be with that roster at LSU.
In week one,
you give Lane Kiffin until October 10th to figure things out.
For sure.
Whereas with DeBoer, we saw last year, Florida State ended up being a terrible team. Gus Malzahn working a little magic, and you know they win 31-17 in Tallahassee. Could you see something similar happen in Lexington with Minshew, a mobile quarterback? You know, you could talk about that narrative. Like, I don't know. I have faith in Stein to not put together a magical year one, but a year one that Kentucky can build on.
Well, it's what you said during the
as
break.
As the better program
was
between Auburn and Kentucky.
It's what you said, though, over the break was just Stein making sure that he gets basically all of the roots planted, right?
Yes.
I mean, stocking up the offensive and the defensive line to at least build from that and then use that as your sell points for the years in the future.
Yeah, and that's the cliche is like, you know, the SEC's one in the trenches, big boy football's one in the trenches, and I really do like some of the additions, especially on the offensive line, Tegger Shabolo from Ohio State, Lance Hurd from Tennessee. I mean, some really formerly highly touted prospects that went and performed decently to very well at their previous schools. They've got a lot of pieces on the O-line, the D-line. They've got some guys coming back, some new faces in. I'm really excited about that group. They've got some guys that maybe you've never heard of but are like 6'6", 6'7", freaks that could really dominate on the edge. I'm excited. There's life. There's something to look forward to. College basketball, Mark Pope, Kentucky, not necessarily giving me that right now. I can't believe I'm talking this much football, and it's February 20th.
That's good. That's a good thing for Kentucky, and it's a good thing for the SEC. But
yeah.
It is still basketball season.
That's right.
And there is a game tomorrow.
Don't remind me.
Inside
for at least
of
one
Neville
more game,
Arena.
It's basketball season.
Yeah. Auburn and Kentucky tomorrow inside of Neville Arena. Again, tip-off set for 7:30. Now, this is on ESPN. I'm sure there's a game before it, which means Auburn probably won't start until 8:42. And if you are going to watch it on TV, you better have ESPN News ready to go. But
unless they finally go 11... What is it, 11, 1:30,
I don't know.
3,
Lance, pull up the
5:30,
schedule for tomorrow.
7:30.
Lance is on it. But you can always listen over on Wings 94.3 with pregame at 7. And, again, tip-off set for 7:30-ish on Wings 94.3. Andy Burcham and Randall Dickey will have the call.
And, Lance, if it makes you really happy, the opening line did come out this afternoon.
I was
afternoon.
Just about to ask about that. What is it?
What would you imagine? Question to both of you. Promise you haven't seen it.
I swear. I
just
I
saw
hand
it
up.
Yesterday.
I have not seen it.
Oh, okay.
I saw it
what would you say the line is then?
I'm thinking Auburn at home, but on a 5-game losing streak. Kentucky's going to be favored.
Do you know what
Kentucky
Ken Pop says? Should we give him that context?
No, don't give me
no,
anything.
No, not yet.
Don't
not
give me
yet.
Anything.
We'll
I'm
lean into
say,
that, and then I'll tell you the official
they
line.
Agree.
I'm going to say Kentucky by 2.5.
So that's what I asked somebody the same question, and that's what they said.
It's flipped.
Auburn 2.5?
Auburn's favored by 2.5.
I just saw it on the CBS Sports app, 3.5.
Wow.
But you could probably get it on FanDuel at 2.5. That's what I saw yesterday.
Jeez.
Ken Pom has Auburn winning by 3.
Which basically
Auburn
means because they're at home. That's what that
yeah.
tells me.
It's This is basketball even more so. With football, yeah, 2.5, 3 is usually the field goal. Home team favorite. Basketball is almost 5,
yeah.
If not 5.5. And so this is anything but a toss-up. I mean,
but you know, and I was going to ask the question to Lance, how different would this feel if this was being played in Rupp Arena tomorrow? But
so different.
But the problem is, Rupp hasn't been that castle for Kentucky, same way that Neville hasn't been that for Auburn.
I still feel like it would be more of a problem for Auburn this year if it was played in Rupp than more of an advantage for Kentucky.
I would actually agree with that.
But you're right, and that's actually something I did get pretty upset about after the Georgia loss is obviously none of you, I wouldn't expect y'all to watch, you know, pathetic Kentucky basketball against Georgia, but if you watch that game.
I am locked in on Locked On Kentucky, though, so I get the full recap.
That's incredible. You got to watch me get really upset. But there were large swaths of that game where you just hear nothing from the crowd. Absolutely dead silent. Even when they're scoring, there's just nothing. It's
have your
cathedral basketball where there's just all these old people crossing their arms and going, my team's not winning, so I'm not going to say anything. They wouldn't say anything otherwise. If Anthony Davis was still out there, they'd still go, they're winning by 30. Time to go home.
We call those purists, Lance. That's what we call those.
Would you would you say or make a comment, have any of the announcers calling Kentucky games at home, have they complained about Kentucky or Rupp not being what it usually is? Because
on the broadcast, I don't know if I've ever paid attention close enough.
Do you know what he's referencing?
Tom Hart.
Oh, Tom Hart was talking about it.
About Neville. Neville Arena.
Oh, being quiet.
Being really poor.
Really?
He said, compared to what I've been in this building when it's at its best.
Yeah, he said, I come here about once or twice a year, and I look forward to the trip. I was looking forward to it, but I was a little bit more nervous about it and talked about how the fan, this was during the Vanderbilt, the midweek game,
okay.
Of how he said that it was nowhere near what it should have been and called out the student section for leaving early and being completely silent.
Vandy never got into it, let him get into it. Like it was one of those where they got up and the crowd went silent and Vandy just kind of took control. It's the same thing that happened with Georgia against Kentucky, is that they got up, the crowd not a factor, and they died. I've come into this expecting Auburn to be up for Kentucky because the students don't know. Sorry. Most Auburn basketball fans won't know much of anything other than that this is Kentucky and the importance that that entails.
Yeah,
which is still true.
Being 8-5 in SEC.
That's not coming from a place of arrogance. That's just fact. Yeah. Anybody is going to, if it was Duke, they would come up and say, it's Duke.
Even if Duke was 500.
Yeah, even if Duke was 500, you get them while they're down, you get them while they're up, you get them whenever they come into town. You are going to be excited and cheering for your squad when one of these programs comes in a Neville.
Who knew that you could get tickets to an Auburn-Kentucky basketball game for $130 right now?
Wow.
$130 on the unnamed site that I'm on right now? I mean,
I see cheaper than that.
I see 5-0 USA over Slovakia right now. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
We're not even in the third period, bro. Just wave the white flag, Slovakia. Just get out of there. You're done.
I wish
you're not
I could
even two in barbecue, bro. You're done.
I wish I could say it's over in Slovakia.
Just Google it, bro. It's fine. Oh, here we go. Here, how about this? I see a hot deal right now. $82.
Yep. To get in the door.
Wow. Compared to what we've seen these games be in the past between Auburn and Kentucky. And so I want to dive into...
Battle of mid.
Literally. I'm going to dive into the matchup a little bit. Again, we got our buddy Lance Dawe, Locked On Kentucky, the Daily Kentucky Podcast, with us in the studio. We've been talking SEC basketball. We've talked about the Kentucky season up to this point. But Lance, you know what's going on with Auburn. 5-game losing streak, coming off the loss against Mississippi State. Kentucky coming off the loss against Georgia. Two teams who feel like they are just to the brink of desperation. Mm. And for this Kentucky team, the numbers still love them. You said it. The numbers still like Auburn, too.
Yeah.
But tell Auburn fans what Kentucky could or should do tomorrow that can give them a chance to win this basketball game.
Very quickly, the game that happens on ESPN, because Auburn, Kentucky's on ESPN, correct?
Yes, at 7:30 officially.
You want to just guess what two teams are playing? Look.
Tomorrow's not Duke, North Carolina, right? They already played once. They have another one coming up.
I guarantee you it's that 1-4, 2-3. I guarantee it's Duke and Arizona or somebody.
It's Duke, Michigan.
That's right. And then it's Houston, Arizona. That's what it is. Yeah.
Why is that game being played right now, by the way?
It's one of those random challenges. That's why Virginia played...
Virginia played Ohio State in Nashville.
Yeah, last Saturday. Why? You know what I mean? But yeah, so, I forgot tomorrow
so
is,
Duke,
yeah.
Duke and Michigan, is that a 5 o'clock or is that...
5:30. So we're going to be waiting.
You thought there could have at least been the 5 o'clock to give a 30-minute buffer.
That's going
to
be one of those where Duke wins by, 12, and we look up and say, oh, Duke's a juggernaut, and they lose round of 32 because they, get pressured by some team that shoots really well, and they get scared and go home.
Yeah, anyway, Arizona-Houston tomorrow at 2 o'clock on ABC.
I mean, this is the game that they're going to join the main broadcast and at the under four timeout.
This is the nightcap for a great day of college hoops.
They set this up months ago.
I'm going to show y'all a meme at the break. I can't say what it says on air, but there's a meme that I have in mind for this contest. So what Kentucky can do in order to go and win this game on the road against Auburn? Well, first and foremost, this Auburn team just does a phenomenal job of pressuring opponents at the rim and getting to the foul line. I mean, that's basically all that they have been able to do well on offense this season with the lack of a true facilitator. I've not asked a lot of Auburn fans about this. I don't know how y'all feel about this. Tahad Pettiford's not the best point guard that you could have possibly put out there for the Tigers this season. He's not playing well. He's not a true one in my mind. And having him be the guy that kind of runs this thing outside of Hall, I mean, you're just not going to get a lot of assists. You're not going to get a lot of touches for other players. And so you kind of have to do run and dunk man stuff, right, with Auburn, where you just bully teams at the rim, try and get to the charity stripe. The first thing that Kentucky has to do, knowing that Auburn doesn't have a true five, is take your two fives, Marino, Garrison, and say, you have to be the best version of yourselves physically and mentally at the rim. If you can deter Auburn from getting to the foul line while also keeping them at maybe a lower efficiency than they've hit at the rim this season, you're going to have a phenomenal chance to win this game. First and foremost, stop them at the rim. The second thing I think Kentucky has to do is also try and be more physical with their guards themselves. Try and enforce things at the rim. Be that slashing team. Make Auburn contest you. Have some touch, which Kentucky has not had at all this season. When you finally do meet an opponent at the rim, body up, finish through contact, have some touch. If you can win the battle at the rim, basically is what I'm saying, then Kentucky's going to win this. This could be an insane like 3-point shootout now that I'm saying this, but I really do think this game is going to be lost or won for the Wildcats depending on how they decide they want to play at the rim. And for Kentucky, a big problem this season has been a matter of want to. Do you get back in transition? Do you contest? Do you stick with your man? Do you communicate on defense? Do you do all these little things in order to finish a possession the way that we want to finish it? There has not been enough effort from these kids making millions of dollars, and they deserve the criticism. This is an opportunity for you to turn things around at the end of the season and say, we have the want to. We have the firepower. We have the desire as the University of Kentucky to go and play for the name on our chest. And this is a game against an Auburn team that's not very good, but does some things to stress you out to where you can prove yourself. They have the chance to do it. Will they do it? I'm not going to lie to you guys. I've not really been giving any predictions for the last month on this Kentucky team because they've proven they're unpredictable. But that's what they would have to do, is just wall up and play a rock fight as best as they could.
It's funny you say that, because we, Jacob and I, went to the Auburn-Vanderbilt game and got to sit there in the press conference with Vanderbilt's head coach, and we asked him the strategy going into this game of, man, you saw a lot of success for Vanderbilt on the defensive end of the floor. What was the strategy? Auburn didn't shoot too many free throws, forced Auburn to shoot from the perimeter, and he said, yeah, exactly that. We walled up, we tried to play defense without fouling, especially in the driving lanes, and we challenged Auburn to see if they would make the extra pass, which they have not done all season long, and because of that, like what you were saying, Vanderbilt gave the stiff arm to Auburn in the entire second half.
So I have a stat for you here, actually. I have a stat for you. On the season, Auburn is getting to the line about 28 times a game, and they're making 20 free throws, basically, 20.7. Over their five-game losing stretch, a little under 24, so like 23-ish free throws a game, 18.4 free throw makes. That is enough to swing some of these contests. They're getting to the line a lot less, and when you look at some of these games, I believe there's three in there where they get to the line like 20 times total. And I believe that one of those games was against Arkansas, where they got to the line 20 times. Against Tennessee, they got to the line 20 times. If you are able to keep them off the foul line, this team doesn't have enough sustained offense. And I say all of this, and they could go out there and shoot the lights out of the ball. Like, that's been the one thing, right? If you take them off the line, they can't shoot. Watch them shoot like 47% from three tomorrow, and I bang my head against a wall the entire game.
It's like what we call with Mississippi State last game.
Yeah.
Force Mississippi State to shoot from the perimeter, and they shoot, 56% from deep.
It's been the same for Kentucky these last two games. Florida and Georgia, terrible shooting teams. Do you know how many threes Georgia made? They made 14. They went 14 of 31. The 291st in three-point shooting percentage. 14 of 30 freaking one. You
can't
predict it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of unpredictable, this feels like one of the more unpredictable Auburn-Kentucky games we've had in quite some time. We'll wrap up the show and give our final picks and predictions right after this here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7.
This is Amber from Amber and Ian. You're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's been a blast today, man. We've had a ton of fun on this free-for-all Friday. My Auburn High girls won today. We forgot to mention that. It was a lot to a little. We can just respect the Enterprise Wildcats and keep it at that. Auburn won and, like, quadrupled their score. So, big-time win for the Lady Tigers this morning. The early wake-up call has not done me well. Oh, yeah, what's the Opelika score? See if that's gone final for the boys. So, yes, my Auburn High Lady Tigers will be back on Wednesday morning in the Elite Eight. They are taking on Central Phoenix City for the fourth time this year.
Never
trying
heard
to completely
of them.
Sweep them. Me neither. So that was fun this morning. Appreciate everybody for hopping on 96.3 W Lee and listening today. But today has been awesome. Today has been a great show. We've talked football, basketball. Reminder, Auburn baseball is in action this weekend, tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Tonight and Sunday, the broadcasts are over on Wings 94.3. Basketball is on Wings 94.3 tomorrow, and baseball will be right here on ESPN 106.7. So a full weekend full of broadcast here in Auburn Opelika. And speaking of the basketball game, Auburn and Kentucky. Lance Dahl of Locked On Kentucky, my friend. Plug your podcast. Tell people where they can find it. and then give your prediction for tomorrow. We got about 2 minutes.
Yeah, if you want to see me mauled tomorrow, at LockedOnUK on Twitter, you can find me upset throughout the game. You can also find me on YouTube, wherever you get your podcast. I'll be streaming a live stream after this game, reacting to it over at Locked On Kentucky on YouTube. If you want to hop in the live chat, Florida fans have made themselves comfortable over on the Locked On Kentucky YouTube channel over the past couple of weeks, and I think they're here to stay, which is awesome. As many fan bases that want to pile on, go ahead. Come on. It doesn't hurt me at all, so just join in. Auburn fans, I know you would love to get this one and to get back after. You know, who was that guy that said that Kentucky was a better football
I think program? We're still trying to find it out.
I think we're still trying to find out.
If you can find out, let us know.
And you know, for the Auburn fans, I would say, you know, Auburn's been a better program or is a better program right now. There is nothing I could say to push back on that. You're right. Over the last, like, 5 years, Auburn's been a better basketball program by far compared to Kentucky. They've had more success in the tournament. They've had more regular season success. They've been recruiting better. They've had more accolades. We'll see if that holds for the next 5 years after what the recent
tomorrow.
But yeah, this is going to be a fun one. Locked On Kentucky, anywhere you get your podcast.
Your final prediction quickly. Auburn and Kentucky tomorrow, 7:30, Wings 94-3 inside of Neville Arena.
Yeah, man, I have no idea what's going to happen in this game. I mean,
That's pretty much how I feel. Man.
I obsess over these teams, man, what they do on and off the court as far as analytics go. I don't know. Give me Kentucky by 15 in a game that Auburn just, you know, wants to die in.
Wow.
Love it.
I don't know that I completely disagree. You mentioned the want-to factor. If Auburn doesn't come out in the first 12 minutes of the basketball game, that under 8 could look really gross. The fans would respond the same way. I like Kentucky.
Kentucky usually doesn't play the first 15 minutes of the game either. So, you know,
first 8 minutes to tell us all we need to know about Auburn. Do they respond or do they crumble? I don't think they respond. I guess we'll see. We'll talk about it on Monday right here. Lance Dahl, we appreciate you, my friend. Always good to see you. Appreciate Lance being here. Appreciate Christian being here. Everybody being here. And thank you so much. We are back on Monday, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. For Lance Dahl, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.
Keeping your money in.